At Arizona State University, we're bringing world-class education from our globally acclaimed faculty to you. Earn your degree from the nation's most innovative university, online. That's a degree better. Learn more at asuonline.asu.edu.
Love espresso, drip coffee, and cold brew? With the Ninja Luxe Cafe, if you can crave it, you can brew it. Espresso? Balanced. Drip coffee? Rich. Cold brew? In a flash. With Barista Assist technology, you brew with no stress and no guesswork. And make perfect silky microfoam hands-free from dairy or plant-based milks. Bring the coffee house home and unlock your favorites with the Ninja Luxe Cafe.
Hey everyone, what you're about to hear is a bonus episode preview. It's a clip from a bonus episode that we recorded for DecodingTV.com members. If you enjoy A Cast of Kings, you want to support the show, you want it to keep going long into the future, please consider becoming a paid member at DecodingTV.com, where you're going to get the full bonus episode of what you're about to hear a clip from, as well as ad-free episodes of the podcast. But here's a clip, and if you want the full thing, sign up at DecodingTV.com. Thanks to everyone at DecodingTV.com who makes this podcast possible. Hello, everyone, and welcome to a special Cast of Kings bonus episode. I'm David Chen. I'm here with Kim Renfro. And we are going to use this bonus episode to talk about random stuff that came up during main episode that we haven't had a chance to discuss, and or your emails, which you can write into castofkings@gmail.com, and or your comments at decodingtv.com. I want to start by saying, if you're listening to this, it means you are a Decoding TV paid member, and we are very thankful for that. You are helping to keep this show afloat and keeping it going. And so thank you so much. And we hope you're enjoying all the stuff that you're getting with your Decoding TV paid membership. But let's move on and talk about our first topic, Kim Renfro, which is time jumps. Now, so far, Kim, I have objected fairly strenuously to the time jumps. You know, I don't think I've been a dick about it, but I've said a couple times that I don't like them. And I
let that slide.
And you let that slide. And you let that slide. Well, the line must be drawn here. No more will you let it slide, right? You are.
I think it's just worth exploring a little bit beyond. Because it is tough. There's always so much ground to cover in the main episodes. But yeah, so like I didn't want to segue us too hard mid-episode. Which is why I let it slide.
But you should feel free to segue as hard as you want during the episode.
Okay. Okay? Noted. Future segues are coming. But I really like the structure of these episodes, and it hadn't occurred to me when I was watching them, you know, in the little isolation of my press reviews that people would not like the time jumps. I thought it was like a clever structure choice given the material that they're working off of. And especially, I know like I couldn't really say it before, but I was like, it feels important that we started out with them as like younger teenagers and then have like gotten to the point that they're now older teenagers. I'm speaking specifically about like Rhaenyra and Alicent exploring their sexuality or having terrible sexual experiences, all of like the nuance in there, and that like we had to do it that way just kind of makes sense to me. And it didn't occur to me that people would be like, oh, I'm missing character development, because to me I'm like, we're getting so much more character development than there is in Fire and Blood, right?
Yeah, sure. Your comparison point is a history textbook, right?
Yes.
Whereas our comparison text point is probably Game of Thrones and or other TV shows, right?
Totally.
So to you, you're like, oh, wow, this is a clever way of like covering lots of ground, and you're actually getting to see the events play out. Here's what I will say about what I like about the show structure is I think that they have done a pretty good job of creating an episodic show structure, right? Like, and what I mean by that is there's too many shows streaming these days on like Netflix where they'll say, oh, it's an 8-hour novel, you know?
Totally.
I like making it's not a television show. It's an 8-hour novel. It's an 8-hour visual novel, you know, or an 8-hour film.
Look at you doing impressions. Am I rubbing off on you?
Yes. You totally are.
Yeah, no, I've always hated that. The like, oh, we really just think of this as like a 10-hour movie. And it's like, well, if I wanted to watch a 10-hour movie, I would. There's a like there's a difference between, yeah, like the binge model that seems to just want episodes to like bleed into each other versus like the reset that we're getting at the start of every episode here almost.
Right. Eric Kripke, who is the showrunner for The Boys on Prime Video, had a really widely shared sentiment about this recently. He says, quote, "The downside of streaming is a lot of filmmakers who work in streaming didn't necessarily come out of that network grind. They're more comfortable with the idea that they could give you 10 hours where nothing happens until the eighth hour. That drives me fucking nuts personally. As a network guy who had to get you people interested for 22 fucking hours a year, I didn't get the benefit of, oh, just hang in there, don't worry. The critics will tell you that by episode 8, shit really hits the fan. Or anyone who says, well, what I'm really making is a 10-hour movie. Fuck you. No, you're not. Make a TV show. You're in the entertainment business." End quote.
Boom. Roasted.
Which shares my thoughts. And what I really like about House of the Dragon is every one of these episodes, or most of the four episodes that have aired, feels like a self-contained idea. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And that's particularly obvious with episode 4, which I think is the strongest episode of them all. But it's like, that is like a, you could just pull that out of the House of the Dragon series. And like, that is like a film in and of itself. That, there's enough there thematically, you know, plot wise to kind of support its own. It could be a short film, like right there, but mm-hmm. on its own, right? And that's what's a great mark of like, it has something to say at the individual episode level.
Yes. Right?
So that's in favor of it.
Great.
Let me read the flip side, right? So there was a there was an article by Zach Cram over at The Ringer who writes about, the headline is, "The time jumps on House of the Dragon are a real problem," right? Mm-hmm. And he writes, quote, "The effect of the time jumps thus far is to create a staccato rhythm with little momentum building between episodes. To fill in the gaps from moment to moment, the show veers too far into telling, not showing. As it does in The Stepstones, when it tells the audience repeatedly, Daemon is losing the war, without ever showing him struggle in a battle or falter on a raid or lose his men." The broader idea of time jumps is reminiscent of a behind-the-scenes quirk of the book series that formed the basis of Game of Thrones. For a while, author George R.R. Martin planned to introduce a 5 or 6 year gap between books 3 and 4. This time jump would have allowed young characters in apprentice position to train and gain skills, but Martin soon discovered that the gap didn't work for all his characters, and he abandoned the plan after a year of futile efforts. The issue, Martin said, was that a time jump meant that he'd need to either write too many flashbacks or settle for a different undesirable solution, saying, quote, "The other alternative was that nothing happened in the 6 years, which seemed anticlimactic. The Jon Snow stuff was even worse because at the end of Storm, he gets elected Lord Commander. I'm picking up there and writing, well, 5 years ago, I was elected Lord Commander. Nothing much has happened since then, but now things are starting to happen again. Finally, after a year, I said, I can't make this work," end quote. So even George R. R. Martin doesn't like time jumps, Kim. What say you to that? No, I'm just, I mean,
yeah.
It's obviously, just like, obviously, he worked on the show too, right? On House of the Dragon. So, but
right. And I do think that the key here is that I'm coming at it from a Fire and Blood book reader's perspective, right? Where like they made a meal out of one sentence about Emma Targaryen dying in childbirth. Like that whole pilot episode was pretty much just like one sentence in Fire and Blood. And
wow.
Right? Like
fascinating. Yeah.
And so, and also like, I totally get the people who are like, look, we just came off of Game of Thrones season 8. And by just, I mean 3 years ago, but we've all been in a time warp since then, as we all know. I know that a frequent complaint about Game of Thrones season 8, and one that I agree with, is that it felt a little bit rushed at points and that we wanted more time to like sit with these character decisions and build up to like certain action points. But that, I think that the reason why that felt off in Game of Thrones season 8 was because we had the first, at least the first 4 seasons for sure, were like deep quality, slow burn, like storytelling that would like ebb and flow very nicely. I would guess that those first 4 seasons of Game of Thrones maybe covered 2 to 3 years of mm-hmm. time in Westeros. And we are now like,
which is already more than the time that we've already covered more time in the first 4 episodes of House of the Dragon.
Right. Which just is totally different. And I think that the reason why it doesn't really bother me with House of the Dragon is because they started us off from that point, right? It's not like they gave us the first half of the season all taking place over like a series of a few weeks or a year, and then all of a sudden we time jumped. But it was like really from the get-go, from 1 to 2, they set the pace of like, yeah, we're going to be kind of like moving in leaps here. And I almost, again, from a book reader's perspective, it's like these first episodes with all of the younger stars playing the kid characters is like, it's like we're getting a prequel within the prequel. It's like we're getting like the big bookmark events in all of these people's lives. And then we're going to like really start digging into things is what I'm guessing the pace is going to feel like. I think it's going to slow down once we hit the adult characters. So I don't, that's part of why I also don't mind it, because I know it's not like a permanent factor of the show that like we're going to just constantly be like doing these big leaps and missing out on solid character development. I think they've given us really good character development, even with the time jumps and everybody.
Well, and to be fair, you're just speculating on what they might do in the future, right?
Like, right. I don't know.
You don't know if they're actually going to slow down. Like they might continue leaping forward vastly in time, right?
They might, but again, it's like...
But eventually they're going to run out because this takes place 172 years before the events of Game of Thrones. Or at least not the events of Game of Thrones. Daenerys Targaryen's birth.
Right, which is, the start.
Which is a couple decades before the events of Game of Thrones, right?
Yeah, or, about... I think she's supposed to be like 16 or 17 yeah. at the start of Game of Thrones. So yeah.
So eventually if they keep jumping forward in time, they're going to catch up to Game of Thrones, which they're not going to do. So...
No.
Does Fire and Blood cover all the time period up to Game of Thrones, though?
He's working on Fire and Blood Volume 2.
I see. Okay, so...
This also technically is an unfinished book project.
Great. But presumably, like Fire and Blood Volume 2 or 3 might get us caught up to Game of Thrones.
Yeah, up to like the Mad King's reign and Robert's Rebellion.
Got it.
So yeah, obviously... Not going to go into spoiler territories of what I know happens in the future, but that's just the sense that I've gotten from this first half of this season is that, yeah, like I said, it's almost like a mini, prequel than a prequel. And I'm just like grateful to have so much more insight and like observation about who these characters are, because we didn't, you just don't get that in Fire and Blood at all.
Right. Well, coming to you from the flip side, Kim Renfro, right?
Yeah.
Is... I think the first time jump was the hardest because we had gotten like pretty invested in this world after the first episode. Rhaenyra has just been announced as the heir. I'm like, ooh, like what's going to happen? Next episode, bam, it's been 6 months. What happened in the did anything important happen in the 6 months? What happened with, Alicent and Rhaenyra's relationship during that time? Like, I felt like we don't know anything that's going on. And so I really felt it after the first time jump. Then I'm like, okay, well, they're clearly doing time jumps. So like my expectations have been recalibrated, but I actually had kind of this conversation with you via text. Before we recorded this episode today, which is like, during our main podcast episode, our main podcast episode went off the rails when we were trying to figure out what the expression you were thinking of was that had to do with ducks. Mm-hmm. And actually, you know, spoiler, the expression you were looking for was hedging your bets, right?
Yes, I'm pretty sure that was it. I don't know why ducks popped into my mind.
It was hedging your bets. And so people corrected, you know, or people brought that up. And when that happened on the show, like I really leaned into it because I feel like the most memorable moments in a podcast or the most funny or meaningful moments are the moments between the moments that you plan for, right? And that's just kind of my philosophy on podcasting in general. And I think that, like, similarly, you know, the moments that happen in between the moments, like these big moments that happen on the show, are the ones that we're being deprived of. And they're often the ones that probably would be pretty meaningful. Like, it's not just like Alicent and Rhaenyra confronting each other about whether she was coupling with Uncle Daemon. Like, that's a big moment that I want to know, you know, how that moment all plays out. But there's dozens and dozens of other moments that lead up to it, of like moments of kindness and awkwardness and whatever between them that like lead up to that moment that give that moment its like emotional punch that we just aren't seeing in the show. We saw a little bit because they obviously had a little talk in Near the Godswood, but like
I was just about to bring that up.
In a normal
I was like,
no question by show knowledge, Kim.
We did kind of get one of those.
Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? But what if there was literally like 5x that many types of moments, you know?
Sure.
Like how much more weighted and fraught would the confrontation have been? So I accept that, like what you're saying, it's giving us a much better, more interesting characterization than the books. Right? Mm-hmm. Like that's true. And also the time, like you could have spent the entire season on just the events of the first four episodes, I think.
Probably. Sure.
Or at least not the events, but like the time frame.
Yeah.
They chose not to. There's probably really good reasons. They're like, hey, we can't make this Daemon Stepstones War thing interesting. Right. Like, but there is a scenario where like, hey, the crab feeder is like the main baddie and he doesn't get taken down till episode 8 or 9. You know, like that's a thing they could have done. They didn't do it. You know, I'm very curious why they didn't do it. But anyway. Just some thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know exactly, aside from the need to like age the characters through their adolescence more like rapidly. My thinking, or at least what I think is successful in the choice that they made with this structure, is that it feels different than Game of Thrones. Like, I didn't really have very many expectations for what this prequel would feel like, but I think if I had really like mined my heart, it would have been like, I don't want them to just do a carbon copy redux of Game of Thrones, even though I loved Game of Thrones. And like that first season, the build up to Ned's death was like impeccable, but I was hoping that it would feel different. And I think that the time jumps and the structure is a big piece of why it feels familiar and yet brand new and kind of exciting of like, ooh, what are we going to get in this next episode? Is it going to be a 2-year time jump, a 3-year? When are they going to switch actors? Like there's a little bit of an anticipation built around just like seeing how they've decided to craft everything that I very much enjoy. But I understand people don't. It's fine.
Well, I will say that I also was hoping for it to be different, but I didn't want the differences to come from pacing perspective.
Okay, you know? Fair.
They can come from the character perspective. They can come from a thematic perspective, which I think they are. But I thought in general, until the final couple seasons, the pacing of Game of Thrones was actually very, very nice, you know?
Yeah. I also love, you really made me think about this differently earlier in the season about how another big difference between House of the Dragon and Game of Thrones is that like all of the scenes that we're seeing are connected to one another, right?
Right.
Like, whereas Game of Thrones, we were hopping all over Westeros and Essos. And I think that they had to sometimes reach a little bit harder to find like the thematic connection between all of these disparate stories and try 100%. To make them feel like they might all come together at any point. Whereas like, it's kind of cool that with House of the Dragon, we're right in it with the same,
right,
largely the same batch of characters.
Because in Game of Thrones, those places are like literally filmed. I'm sorry, those storylines are literally filmed in different
countries
around the world with, by different units. And so you can imagine they're like filming one story, like the Dorne story, right? And then they like film all the Dorne story and then they like bring it to the editing room and they got to figure out a way to make it all work. It's tough. I don't envy how challenging that was like narratively. So the benefit that we have with House of the Dragon is we're focusing on like the same characters every episode. And I no issue with that, by the way, Kim. You know, I'm not. Do you hear me saying like, I wish we were visiting other parts of Westeros? You know, I don't care about that. Like, so
you're like, I really need to know what's going on in Winterfell when all of this is happening,
right? So they managed to tell an engaging story without that. So yeah. I think I'm not a fan of the time jumps, and also it means obviously we're gonna, you know, probably lose our time with Millie Alcock pretty soon. Like, it's been reported that in the next couple of episodes, she's not going to be, we're going to flash forward and there's going to be a different actor. And that's a bummer. That's a bummer, you know?
Yeah. I feel that.
She's a very compelling actor. So
she is.
That was a preview of a bonus episode for A Cast of Kings. Sign up at decodingtv.com to get more bonus episodes and ad-free episodes of the main show.
Thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same-day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.